As KPTZ absorbs the recent loss of host Wendell Ankeny of the Old Time Radio Show, we are reminded of the incredible support that our community receives from hospice care. This timeless show, hosted by Everybody Can host Sheila Ramsey, talks with Chris Lawson of the Jefferson Healthcare Hospice Program and Tom Duke, president of the Hospice Foundation Board, about the everyday work of a hospice volunteer.
Welcome to Everybody Can, a conversation about volunteers and volunteer opportunities in Jefferson and Calalum counties. I'm your host, Sheila Ramsey. Our show is inspired by the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, "Everybody can be great because everybody can serve." We bring you information about the people who volunteer, serve on boards, donate, and sometimes just show up all over the community to help build what King called a beloved community. A few months ago, we had a conversation about volunteering with the Jefferson Healthcare. Part of that discussion covered hospice volunteering, and today I'd like to dive a little deeper into that conversation with the volunteer coordinator, the Hospice Foundation, Chris Lawson. With Chris is Tom Duke, who is the chair of the board of directors of the Hospice Foundation. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you, Sheila.
Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
We talked a little bit about this before, but I really, you know, for my own interest as well as just, I think it's important to sort of get it out there, to be really specific about what your volunteers do, what the impact is, how they interface with staff, how they help staff, that whole detail stuff of this. So let's start with, what do your volunteers do?
I would like to start with the whole team. And we call the hospice team the interdisciplinary team. That will include the nurse, the CNA, that's the home health aide, include spiritual care. And part of that team is the volunteer. The volunteer is an integral part of that team because very often the volunteer is seeing the patient and or the family more often than any of the other team members. That's just speaking to the importance of a volunteer. What can a volunteer do? Just about anything for the family other than any clinical work or
providing meds?
They cannot provide meds. They cannot drive unless they're an echo driver and are licensed that way. But they provide respite time for the caregiver. We recently had a case where the spouse was the primary caregiver of their loved one and refused to leave his side. We got a volunteer in there, and after about a couple visits, she said, "You know what? I think I'm going to go out for a walk." That's the sort of thing that a volunteer can provide. Other times, the volunteer can come in, and we have a request right now for someone to play cards.
Really?
The patient loves to play cards, so the volunteer is going to come in and play cards, probably chat a lot too, but play cards. We can run errands as a volunteer, meaning run to the grocery store. We had a case of a gentleman who was quite ill, obviously, and homebound, but he loved takeout food. Absolutely loved takeout food. Thai, any kind. And so our volunteer would go get takeout food and bring it back to him. And even though he was quite ill and couldn't eat everything, this wasn't about nutrition. This was about doing something that he loved and he missed very much.
So you're like a good neighbor.
A good neighbor, right. Volunteers usually spend anywhere between 4 to 6 hours a week with the family and or the patient. We ask that you commit, once you've been through the training, to being available for a year. That doesn't mean that you have a patient every week during that year, but being available to be on call if we need someone.
So do you follow, as a volunteer, do you follow one person through their illness?
Usually, yes. That's how it happens. Sometimes we have some snowbirders who are volunteers, and so they're gone from October through March. We'll get another volunteer to come in to take their place while they're out of town. But normally, yes, you would be with the patient and or the family throughout.
Would you like to introduce Tom Duke?
Yes, I would. Good friend and president of the board foundation, Tom Duke.
This is Tom. Hi.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Sheila. I've been on the board now, I think, for 4 or 5 years, and I really had no intention or no interest in hospice until I was asked to join the board. And since then, it's become a big part of my life. So the board is all volunteer. We have 12 board members. Actually, we have no paid staff. what we do is all volunteer. The mission of the board is to raise funds, which we, on request, give back to the hospice program, and I'll talk about that a little bit. And then to go out into the community, we have a speakers bureau that are board members who go into the community, and they'll go to like Rotary and Kiwanis and churches, and wherever they're asked, they'll go, and they have a whole program that they do. How do I want to describe this? There are things that Medicare or insurance does not pay for. And Chris can probably address this a bit, but one of the things is called comfort care. That can be acupuncture, massage, getting your hair done, that kind of thing. We will pay for it. So if a hospice social worker or nurse goes in and is aware that somebody could use that, they request it, we pay for it. Bereavement services are required by Medicare, but they don't pay for it. So we pay for all the bereavement services. They are free to family before and after somebody
dies. What does that mean, bereavement support?
Well, we do several things. We have a chaplain who is with the hospice program, not the foundation. He's there and he meets with individuals and just help them be with their feelings mm-hmm. and do that work. Professionally, I'm a retired psychotherapist. So, I mean, I would tell people, listen, you lose somebody you love, you really never get over it, but it softens in time. And so that's what bereavement is really about. It's like kind of getting you through a really tough time.
The softening of
we also pay for a woman, Christina Manzoni, who does different kinds of groups, bereavement groups, special groups. One thing we've done too, which I don't want to get too out in left field, but the foundation has paid to develop a pilot program for a palliative care program at Jefferson Healthcare, which will be starting, I believe, Chris, in August.
Correct.
So basically, it's almost like pre-hospice, but you don't have to be in hospice, and you likely will survive and get through it and be fine. But it will be a wraparound program where you have social work help, you will have pain management, whatever the team determines is needed, it will be provided. And we've paid for the study to put this together.
Wow.
So the foundation is quite a cool organization. It's also a 501c3, so we are not the hospital. We are not the hospice program. We're a standalone nonprofit.
So this is a working board.
We are very much a working board, so we have no staff. So we need help.
So the board needs help. Volunteers.
The board is all volunteers. Like right now, we have a person who's a retired oncology nurse who is really into writing grants, and she's just into it. And we have our board treasurer is, I think, formerly with Merrill Lynch. He is just a pistol about managing our money. And so we just have different people with lots of different skills. We have people who really like to do speaking in public. Generally, they have a healthcare background. So we have several retired oncology nurses on the board. And everybody's just very hardworking. I mean, I just think it's fabulous, this board.
That's what keeps you going, I'm assuming.
It does. I mean, frankly, when I go to a board meeting, I'm just happy to see everybody. And they're a great bunch. And, you know, my job is to kind of oversee without really not doing a lot. Or at least that's how I feel about it. But they're so different people with different skills. So one last thing. We have goals of doing respite care. We would like to be able to provide respite care with people coming in to do respite care who could actually do meds and do sort of CNA kind of work. So we have committed to training a few people to be CNAs. We don't have enough money yet to actually pay. We've committed $10,000 a year so far. We would like to be able to pay for anything that's requested in respite care. To do that, we need more money. So we have now developed a legacy giving program, which is in its infancy now. And the goal is to have enough money to be able to pay for pretty much anything that's needed outside of Medicare and private insurance.
That sounds like a fantastic way to get involved.
Jefferson Hospice Foundation. Go to the website. You feel free to call me. I think my phone number is there and I can talk about the legacy stuff, or I, you know, set you up with our treasurer who actually knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Okay.
So Chris, CNA training, do your volunteers, can they go through that or how does that work?
No, that would be actual CNAs being trained to be able to give meds.
Okay.
That's a more clinical side. But all of these programs that Tom is talking about, the respite, that would include a volunteer coming in. Respite care is allowing the family, the primary caregiver, to actually take a break more than an afternoon nap. That means maybe take a long weekend. And so we will have volunteers, we will have a CNA come in to care for the patient in their home and allow that respite time just to get away. A volunteer also, we're talking about putting volunteers in with the palliative care program. And a term I, or a phrase I heard that's important, all hospice is palliative care. Not all palliative care is hospice. But often folks on palliative care will likely or can likely move into hospice. So we have a volunteer, we're working on preparing volunteers, our hospice volunteers, to work with those families and patients on palliative care. And if they should move over into hospice, then they have that volunteer, the same person, to go through the whole process with them.
Do you find volunteers want to do more than those 4 hours? I imagine if you get involved with a family, you want to serve as much as you can.
Well, you do, but you also have to remember this is a therapeutic relationship. So you're there, and there are boundaries. Sometimes, for instance, when I volunteered, I did 6 hours at one time on a Saturday. This was many years ago in Seattle because I was working full time. So I gave them 6 hours for them to take a break. Others can be 2 hours on Tuesday, 2 hours on Thursday, that sort of thing. So the volunteer comes in and works with the family and the patient on what they need, right, when they need that volunteer.
So the volunteer is not working on their own. They're really part of a team of volunteers who might be seeing the same family.
We have. We usually don't do teams, but I'm working on a program to develop teams also. Because of the limited time, say 4 hours a week with one volunteer, there may be a family who needs somebody 8 hours or 10 hours. So then we would create a team so that we had one or two or three volunteers coming in. Because that would just be too much time and too much of a commitment for, I believe, one person.
Well, I'm from 12 children, mm-hmm, and when my parents passed, it took all of us and our children to do all that. So I can't imagine one volunteer doing 4 hours would be enough for a family.
Right. And yeah, sometimes it is, because yeah, all they want is maybe companionship for the patient, just wants companionship, somebody to read to them. The 4 to 6 hours usually is about the average. Right.
Tell me about the hospice training. Is it 6 weeks, 9 weeks? What?
Thank you very much, because we had a volunteer from my last interview come through. And we have a new training, which is online, which I am doing. And we will have a new training coming up in September. So everything will be online other than 4 Saturdays, 3 hours each on those Saturdays. I haven't firmed up the date quite yet, but we just had our first graduating class of 3 people. They were very, very positive in their responses back to me and what they felt about the class. And it ends up being about probably close to 25 to 30 hours that you spend over this 6 to 8 week period.
What comments do you get from the volunteers who've been working? Is there an issue with burnout? Is there an issue with wanting to do more? Is there an issue with belief systems?
Rarely do I run into burnout. Occasionally I have seen it, but our volunteers are so aware of that, that they will say, time for me to take a break, or I just had a very hard case and a difficult situation. I'm going to take a month or two break. So that's very, very common. But more common is your point. They will always want to do more.
Oh, I'm sure.
Always want to do more.
Chris, my understanding is that you also meet with all the volunteers once a month.
Yes.
And so that they can kind of talk to each other and share some of their experiences and get support and that kind
That's
of
great.
Thing.
We have a monthly meeting, and we have 29 active volunteers now, but always can use more. And usually on our monthly meeting, we have at least 20 people. They find this community of other volunteers really, really helpful, and they become friends. They definitely become friends. Hospice can be kind of a lonely volunteer situation because you're by yourself with the family. So this group, when they come together, there's a lot of sharing and a lot of laughter.
So in the training, is there time spent on reflection of your own dying process?
Absolutely.
Walking into it? Okay.
Absolutely. That's a very integral part of the hospice training, is to talk about your own death, your feelings about death. You have to work through that. And it doesn't mean that you have all the answers. You don't have to have all the answers to become a hospice volunteer, for sure. But you have to contemplate your own death, obviously.
So how can we get a hold of you?
You can call me anytime. My office is at Home Health and Hospice up on Sims Way. And my telephone number is 360-385-0610. And I can be reached at klawson, K-L-A-W-S-O-N, at jgh.org.
And Tom, how can folks get a hold of you?
I'm tduke at olipen.com.
Great.
I want to add something here. I want to make a distinction between Jefferson Healthcare Hospice and the Hospice Foundation. They are separate. The foundation is a standalone nonprofit. And I think it's interesting. Chris, we actually pay her salary, but she's embedded in the hospice program of Jefferson Healthcare. I mean, she's great, as you can tell.
Right.
And so, you know, she does her job. And she comes to the board every now and then and kind of reports what she's doing. And so they're really separate. Sheila, you asked me before we started, does the foundation get involved with actually the volunteers who are actually sitting with the hospice patients? No, we don't. We stay out of the whole administration or actual caregiving. We raise money, donate it back to, on request, to the hospice program, and we educate the community.
And you help to plan.
And well, we do a lot of planning.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So we can always use board members with skill, and it could just be simply people skills.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, help us all get along even better.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Tom Duke and Chris Lawson, thank you both for coming in today, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Everybody Can is a production of KPTZ.org at 91.9 Port Townsend, Washington. I'm your host, Sheila Ramsey. Our production coordinator and today's engineer is Mike Schletzer. I want to thank program manager Larry Stein, and I want to thank all the incredible volunteers, really, who worked to bring us eclectic music along with local news and conversations here on the North Olympic Peninsula. You can also join us on the web at kptz.org.